welcome to the Grand Hill Chronicles podcast. I am your host, Don Bishop, and the beautiful Lila. We are dressed the same as we were last episode because...
We didn't change clothes.
It was 30 seconds ago for us.
Hey, before we go any further, I want to tell you that we are running a contest. Yes, I'm wearing the same shirt again. It is now 3 weeks later, and I promise I have changed my clothes since recording the last... Anyway... So we are now running a contest through the end of June, but stick with us and I'll tell you more about it at the end of this episode. We'll see you at the other end.
So let's talk about some updates. And I think one life update before we go into Grand Hill and business, whatever updates. We talked about career designation previously, I think.
Maybe. I don't remember.
So usually I'm pretty vague in the podcast, or maybe one or two episodes ago I was... specific, but usually I've been vague about my day job. So I'm in the Marine Corps and I'm an officer. So we come with an automatic expiration date called an end of active service date. And after a couple of years, we may be offered career designation. Your ES goes away and you just keep going. But yeah, I was offered career designation. And we deliberated, and in the end, I said, no, thank you. It's a great opportunity, but I'm going to move on. I mentioned in the last episode, we settled into a house. It takes us a lot of time and work, and it's been hard. We've had the Airbnb drama. We've had other drama. Like, we're done moving, at least for several years. We're done moving, and I want to do something different. So yeah, I said no to career designation. So that means that I kept my end of active service date and my active duty service will expire. That's the life update. Now, did you want to...
Uh-oh. I don't have a whole lot.
Surprise?
Yeah, sure. So these are just these taffies. Future sponsor or something.
Yeah, Numa, call us up. We'll gladly accept some compensation to talk about your product again.
They're really tasty. So they're called Good For You Taffy. And as far as I know, they come in like 5 flavors, I think. And the reason they're good is because I wouldn't say I don't eat this instead of a meal. But as far as candy goes, it's pretty good. So it comes with 4 grams of protein per serving, which you don't usually get in candy. Not a whole lot anyway. I guess if you get like something with nuts or something, that goes up. But they all have it, and even if they don't have nuts. Which at least one of them has. And it says 40% less sugar than leading brands. And so I don't know what they're comparing to, but it isn't. I mean, it's still pretty sweet. It's taffy, so it still is. But it's not as sweet as it might be if you went a different route. So I'm really excited to have found them. They're super tasty. And it's a mother-daughter team that started the company. So that's kind of fun for me, too. I like it. Great. Like that's the thing.
He's going to leave that product placement right there. Well, then it'll block you. Okay, progress. I mentioned the logo, and I showed this sorry little black and white printout last episode, and I shared the color version. This time I'm going to share, and I feel dumb because I'm only talking about it and I'm not showing it, but I have another version. I've created a couple of different versions, just different colors, I guess, but also, as you can see today, that I replaced the circles at the corners of the triangle, I replaced those with other triangles to be able to have those shapes at the corners jutting out less from the center triangle.
I think it's a good look. I mean, and regardless of what usefulness it has.
It makes the rose bigger. It accentuates the rose in the middle.
And I think it's a fun shape, too.
Yeah.
And
I'm going to tweak it. I want to tweak it again and make the corner triangles a little bit smaller. You might see that today, or maybe you'll see it in the future. I don't know. I'm also working on a logo for Thorn Syndicate Publishing. And then, you know, we're a little conflicted about this here, because we have... So with the Thorn Syndicate Publishing, I'm using pieces. Do you want to talk about it? You know what the pieces mean.
The pieces. Yeah. No, I don't remember.
So I have all these parts.
I
think it's
awesome, and I love the look of it. I like that we're looking at this one. It's kind of a pill-shaped, but and I like that it was kind of floating out like it was a bubble.
Like bubbles. Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I liked what you had going there.
So we have the square.
Can you undo?
And the square, yeah. There's a square, and the square has two semicircles on either end. So it creates a pill shape. It's not that I'm trying to make a pill shape, but that's what it does. And then there are two other circles inside the square, kind of placed towards opposite corners, but they're large, so there's not much space in between them. And then there's yet another circle, a little bit smaller, that I was scooting off to fill a third corner, but Lila thinks it's fun.
I think
jutting out of one side. I don't know, maybe I'll just share this in the notes where you can see on thorn.link/Grendhill. You can see a few different versions. So the Thorn Syndicate Publishing, there's also, like, I have another version I'll include there where the smaller circle is huge. So the square just touches at the corners, just touches the big circle. And then the two semicircles are folded in instead of flowing out like a pill.
So it's kind of filigree.
And it looks Gaelic or Celtic, something like that. So we're playing with those designs, and we think it's interesting and fun. We're also considering, because we definitely want to break into children's books. We have an idea for a podcast and accompanying books to go with it. And we're thinking of taking the pill shape and rotating it, and then taking one of the semicircles and putting it adjacent the other semicircle to form a heart. And you'll see that.
Hopefully you can follow that.
Heart for the little children.
Yes, and I really like the way it looks too. Yeah. Do you want to talk about the significance of the shapes?
Sure. The lines, okay, it's our names. It's Lila and Dawn. And, okay, bear with us here. OSB Studio. You can capture a display, or you can capture...
Oh, wow. Is that like Eternal Displays? What was that?
That's when it's grabbing the display that it's in. Hall of Mirrors. Actually, Lila thinks that's... It is cool. So I'm going to record this. And so if you're watching the video, you can see this. It is fun.
It looks like that old video game. You remember, little ships would go down... It's one of the early... Did you ever play that?
A lot of video games were kind of like this.
Like, it was just nested rectangles.
Yeah.
And the ship goes down, like, the chute. And I can't remember what you do. Anyway, it looks like that. Fun with all the colors.
This is what I was talking about here. Oh, this is missing a couple of lines.
Okay.
So you'll see this. I'll draw with a different color so we can see it. We are going to spell our names. Be ready to turn yourself over and around and whatever. So here is Lila. L-A-I-A. So you see it was missing those two red stems for the lowercase a's. And then there's... I'll do a different color. There's Dawn. This is our reuse of one line right here. D-O-N. Like if you look at it sideways, this is the bottom.
Oh, like this?
It's a lowercase
like
kind
of N. Oh, am I not on camera? Are you still?
Oh, okay. Yeah, you are.
Like that.
Numa, like the N in
like
Numa.
Like if you tipped it over.
Anyway, so...
Except it would be the other side.
These lines spell out Lila and Dawn.
I have another message from our sponsor.
Okay.
Another thing I want to say is that there's a little saltiness to these, which brings out the sweetness without having to have as much sugar. So I think that's kind of how they balance it and how it still tastes really desserty without being overly sweet, like sickeningly sweet. So yeah. Numa! There you go.
So let's talk, finally, about stories.
All right. And so what's your most recent? What have you most recently been working on? I mean, I know it's been a while because you took a little break.
I've been frustrated. I've basically written nothing in like a month. I talked to the well-established author. We need to give him a code name because I haven't talked to him to ask if I might mention him. I don't know if he wants to be associated with me. Maybe I would embarrass him because I'm not established and I would show myself to be an embarrassment. I don't know.
Call him Mr. Underhill.
Okay, so I emailed Mr. Underhill with Go Homusp, these misfit superheroes, if you will, and he pointed out very undeniably that it's not a great plan for
it's not a good sales. Premise. Yeah.
I need to build a brand, and I need to build a brand on something that has an audience. Mm-hmm. I need to publish a genre that has readers. And these misfit superheroes don't really have readers. So, just mentioning that really quick, on that note, I've been wondering, like, what am I going to do? And I've been thinking, I guess I don't need the writer's income yet. I was thinking to start publishing some things to start, you know, kind of start the snowball rolling on the hill to get people knowing my name so that when I do need the income from writing, it can start. It's there.
But you don't want, I mean, you won't get that if it's something nobody's going to be reading because they're going to think it's outside of what they're interested in.
Yeah.
So we think that the story is more interesting than it appears when you describe it. But you can't sell a story on that, so I was thinking maybe, well, I mean, and you agree that if you get your name out and your work out more, and then people are looking to see, read more of you, then they'll give it a chance maybe later down the road.
But it's got to be get your name out the right way. Mm-hmm. They say that no publicity is bad publicity, and there's certain truth in that, because if people are talking about you, that gets more attention towards you. On the other hand, if it's they talk about you as being uninteresting or just whatever, irrelevant.
Or the interest might be fleeting.
Yeah.
And then they might venture a little and then drop you.
So with Gohamisp, and Lila said we never get to talk. We don't get to talk as much as we would like to. So I haven't told you.
Oh, but surprises for Lila.
I've been thinking, well, she knows some of this. She knows some of what I'm about to say. I've been thinking about Gohamisp and converting it into something more serious toned. So within the Gohamisp universe, for those of you who don't know, it's the Guild of Holders of Marginally Useful Superpowers. It's an intentionally dumb and awkward acronym because it's, you know, misfit superheroes and whatnot. They have largely useless superpowers, like the ability to make grass grow twice as fast, you know, and whoever can do that is going to have a good wheat crop, right? Or maybe he's a bamboo farmer, but he's not going to sweep in and save the He's not going to swoop in and save the day anytime soon. But in the Gohamisp universe, I was thinking that there was a totally legit ultra superhero 3, 4, 5 decades ago. And then there was a super arch villain that had a rivaling level of power. And so they come at it, and the ultra superhero dies, but not before bestowing his power upon the earth or something like that. And so now it's bubbling up. And it's bubbling up. I didn't mean that literally, but I guess if I say it's upon the earth and now it's bubbling up from the earth, it could be literal. Mm-hmm. It's bubbling up and hitting people, not literally, but people are finding themselves to have these powers, which are kind of dumb and useless, but some of them are interesting and some of them are kind of useful, like what I came up with the other day.
Oh, the ability to freeze time?
Freeze time.
Except for...
But you're frozen too. You can think.
Except you can think.
You can think.
You can't move or anything.
But, like, that would be really useful in some situations. Mm-hmm. Like, you'll never get stuck there, like, yeah, well, you know, trying to think of a comeback. You just pause time. You take as much time as you want. You think of a good comeback.
Or like I was mentioning about word finding. Oh, this was the last episode.
Yeah.
Do that, and I've gotten really self-conscious about it, so then I stutter now because I'm like, oh, I can't, I'm gonna find the word, I'm gonna lose the word, and I'm always afraid. And so if I could just take a step back, it would help me kind of deal with this trauma. But I was going to say that these are real people. So you want to make them real people with real lives and real concerns. Yep. But there's an undercurrent of humor because of the ridiculousness of these powers.
Well, yes, you're right. But I'm thinking more, a little bit more specifically, leaning farther away from the Ben Stiller version of Mystery Men. I've never read Percy Jackson, but our daughter has read it, and she loves the whole series. She loves anything Rick Riordan. And she says it's really funny. Yeah, I've heard it pronounced Riordan in other cases.
In the audiobooks, I think they say Riordan.
Mm. It's probably Riordan. Anyway, so our daughter says they're really funny, but they're not billed as funny,
mm-hmm.
right? And so that's what I'm thinking with Gohamas. But I'm also thinking of a re-identification as the Fractured, because this ultra superhero's powers got fractured among thousands of people.
So what do you mean by a re-identification? In the storyline, they're going to call...
No, just a total shift and rebrand.
So forget Gohamas?
Yeah. So maybe there's one guy saying, we should call ourselves Gohamas, but everybody else is like, what? Dude, you're crazy.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, as far as these Percy Jackson books, that's a good point. Because there's a lot of intense, there's a lot of suspense and adventure and danger, and some of the characters die and everything. So it's a very serious thing that they're that they embark on, but they have funny interactions sometimes, and it is kind of ridiculous sometimes, but in a funny way.
So
I'm not even looking at the
I'm
camera.
I'm tumbling the idea, and maybe it'll wind up even being a fantasy, like other world fantasy. I don't think so. It kind of loses it. Especially because some of them have technology-related powers, like Zero Day. Anyway, so Gohamasp, that's that. And then Grendhill. I think I'm going to lean into Grendhill.
Yeah, you had mentioned that, because that's where your heart is, and
but it's
a good...
daunting.
It's a good, solid... I think there's a lot of interest in that. How did you categorize it? What was the subgenre that you had?
High fantasy.
And you were saying you wondered adventure. Do you remember we were Don texted me a little bit about this, and you were trying to decide, is it more this or is it more that? Do you remember that?
Mm-mm. Was it recently?
I don't know, like last week or so. I don't remember. But yeah, you were mentioning the different genre types and wondering if what it actually fit into. I'm going to find it. You can keep talking.
So I'm thinking I want to lean into Grendhill, but it's not so simple because it's tied to our Union of Stars. And I think I might change that title. That's a working title. But our Union of Stars is a sci-fi and Grendhill is a fantasy. But
I just wrote a typo. Fantasty.
Fantasty.
Something
all right,
to think about.
Send us pictures of your food on Instagram or on Twitter.
Your fantastical food.
Show us your tasty food, because then you will be selected as the fan-tasty listener or watcher.
Of the month. The month. Recurring thing here, right?
The Grendhill Chronicles podcast fan-tasty listener of the month.
But seriously, if you have that, send it.
Do that, and we'll send you a coupon to something.
Okay. This is fun. Sorry to throw you off.
No, it's fine. So, Grendhill and our Union of Stars, I don't want to get into right now why they are so connected, but I want to... Our Union of Stars involves an alien humanoid race. Very humanoid, like basically human. Maybe a few noticeable differences in features, you know, like the Klingon eyebrows and the pointy ears, but not going as far as blue blood. I said Klingon, I meant Vulcan. But it still applies until you get to blue blood. Blue blood is Vulcan. Klingons have purple blood. So anyway, this alien race needs a language. And I'm really daunted by that. I intend to create a language.
So I have two things to say. One is I found the conversation, so we can get back to that because I do want to talk about it. It was something I
Okay.
wanted. In fact, I mentioned, I think, I was like, podcast episode tonight or something because I wanted to talk about this. But the language thing, I'm just talking. I was just gonna say that Tolkien, how long was it that he wrote that it took him to write the whole series? It was like, I think, I can't remember. It was something like 20 years or more, maybe. I don't remember. You guys who are experts on this can correct my very approximate information. But it took him a long time, and he had different reasons. I mean, I'm not saying different from yours, but he had various reasons for that being the case, which he mentions in his like a prologue, I think. I can't remember, of a reissue or something that came out back in the day. So he gives a good explanation for the reasons. But I'm like, this famous, very well-respected writer not didn't struggle necessarily, I don't want to say that, but it took him all of these years to piece all this together. And I'm afraid of you maybe falling into the same thing, like
Afraid of the all of
of all
these
of the
years?
detail that
Oh.
you want to engender Rentil with, it's going to take ridiculous amounts of time.
Well, we've been at it for 12 and a half years.
But not full time. Like it's, I guess he didn't do full time either, but yeah, I'm concerned. I'm concerned that if you go too deep into the weeds, then you're gonna
Well,
lose your way.
there are some things that I want to have in common between Grand Hill and our Union of Stars, and that includes a language. I'm going to invent a language for our Union of Stars, and it will show up in the Grand Hill universe as well. And I can't publish Grand Hill. Like, even if I were like, okay, I'm gonna publish this intro novella for Grend Hill. I can't do that until I have this figured out. I need this language, and I need some other cultural things figured out that I want to reuse in Grend Hill.
I think the language is,
Reuse and change them up.
it's a wonderful idea, and I have a lot of respect for you wanting to do that, but I think it's just going to be a hang up.
No, it won't be a
It's
hang up.
too massive.
I'm not a linguist, but I sometimes fancy myself one. Insert meme of oh,
Oh,
what's his name? It's from Spider-Man from 2002.
the Tobey Maguire?
Yeah, the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man where Willem Dafoe's character, why can't I remember his name?
Oh, the Phantom,
He
the
says, you know, I'm
Faceless.
something of a scientist myself.
I don't
Anyway, so you
remember.
know, I'm something of a linguist myself. So, I learned Spanish as an adult. And while I learned Spanish as an adult, I was noting the similarities and the differences between how the two languages worked. And I learned Spanish for a religious mission. I went and taught the Gospel of Jesus Christ in Spanish for 2 years. And after those 2 years, I continued to think about languages, because as I was learning Spanish, I saw cognates between English and Spanish, and I saw
Syntax or
not quite cognates, and I saw some things in Spanish that they tell you that you can't translate directly from English, that you can translate directly from English. You just have to take English from the Bible. And so there are language structures. It's like the word todavía in Spanish means literally and exactly yet. Colloquially in English, these days, we very often say still, but if you revert back to an older English, you could replace still with yet, and it still works. And
It
in
yet
either
works.
case, it yet works. And in either case, in Spanish, you can say todavía. It means yet. And in modern English, it also means still. But if you think about yet, it's todavía. And if you're listening to somebody say Spanish, somebody speak Spanish, and you hear the word todavía, and you can put yourself in King James Bible English, you translate it as yet, and it makes sense. Whereas if you try to understand it in modern English, mm-hmm. it might not make sense.
It doesn't align. Yeah.
Anyway, so I noticed things like this, and not just with words like that, but also with structures, with syntax. And I think it's fascinating. And you see how languages split, and sometimes they converge. You think about the letter X in English. For us, it's X. And in Spanish, it's X. Except it didn't always used to be. And in Greek, it's not. And in Russian, it's not. I hope I don't offend anybody who knows Russian, because that's not actually the letter X. It's something that looks like the letter X. Come on. It's derived from the same... It's the letter X. So in Russian, it's H, approximately. I don't speak Russian, so... it's basically a hard H, uh-huh. and if you pull out old books in Spanish, you'll see, and the entire country south of the United States is spelled with an X that sounds as a hard H, and...
Why didn't you mention the name of the country?
Well, because I'm making a point. It's so obvious. Oh, Mexico.
The country like, that cannot
Mexico,
be
it's Mexico. You know, the X there, So languages evolve, and they meet, and they diverge, and it's intriguing stuff. If you can strip away the layers of how a language is used and get to the foundations of what defines it, and this would be the grammar rules, the syntax, basic structures, and throw in a few just really common colloquialisms.
Like the form of language.
Then you have your framework. Now you just throw words at it.
I know.
You throw words at it.
You take, like, Tolkien was a professor, mm-hmm. and, you know, he was at that level. This is what he did for a living. And he still had to parse so much. And he borrowed from
English, like, and uh-huh. Norse
yeah.
Roots, which I do not intend to do.
Well, sure. I mean, don't, if you don't want to. But I'm just saying... It might be a more complex endeavor. I know it sounds like cut and paste. Here we go, just fill in these blanks. I think the process, though, will get more complex as you go. Just yeah. because you're going to have to... It can't be that easy.
I see it taking me a few really involved sessions where I have to dive in and spend a little bit of time of deep thought. And then after those few times... It'll be filling it in. And it'll be
maybe
decisions,
right.
but I'll
maybe
have the
right.
foundation of my framework. Yeah.
Scaredy pants.
Yeah. And I maybe I'm more daunted than I should feel. Because you can find instructions on how to invent a language online. Mm. And I've read these instructions, and I'm surprised at how they make it sound not so insanely daunting. Hmm. And I don't believe it, that it's that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that it's as easy as they make it sound. And mm-hmm. I don't think they're... Anyway. So, yeah, I need to create a language. And that's been holding me up as well.
I would like comments on what your opinions are on this. I was going to say fellow listeners, and I was like, they're not fellow. They're...
So I'll tell you my thoughts on this alien race so far. Mm-hmm. They're humanoid. My main character in Union of Stars is going to fall in love with one of them. And it's not going to be weird and creepy because they're so human. Mm. But I need to come up with an alien culture. I'm picturing their world as having... less land mass than ours. I'm picturing probably a more mature civilization, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they are more advanced in all technologies. I am picturing them more advanced in space drive. They have faster space drive engines than humans. Humans do have space flight. We are spacefaring when we run into them. The working name I have for this alien race is the Onumani. And I'm kind of... I haven't spoken this out loud, but I'm kind of kicking around the idea of making their civilization somewhat ancient Greek-like. Because I'm picturing less landmass, more insular, whatever. More islands, less continents. And a more unified society. That's why I said a more mature civilization. They've figured out peace a little better within their society, I think. I might change that. When I get to writing, I might decide otherwise.
Did you mention how you want these things to intersect with Grendel?
I might have in a previous episode. I haven't today.
Because I think that would be an interesting thing to talk about. So, maybe not on this episode, but...
Yeah.
That's an interesting point.
Yeah.
And I think it bears a lot of thought to sort out.
I read recently that Tolkien created a language and then simulated cultures diverging and then extracted two different languages from that one. And I don't remember the names of the languages, so maybe that's Mordor and Elvish. I don't know.
I don't know the names,
not an ultra Tolkien fan. It's cool. I love Lord of the Rings, but I don't nerd out and study up. Sorry. But
those are the two.
I kind of see something. I'm going to do some language mutation.
Mutation.
So the Onumani language that shows up in Grendel, there will be bits of it that will be pure, and there will be other things derived from it.
Like Latin? Like Latin, and things are derived from Latin?
Yeah.
Okay.
So. Anyway. I think I'm done talking.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, you guys go out and buy yourselves a bag of Numa.
Yeah, Numa, Taffy. Numa, go ahead and feel free to send us a sponsorship contract, and we'll take a look at that.
We might not increase your numbers very much yet, but just wait. Anyway, banana, coconut is my very favorite flavor. The others are respectable too. It's just my personal preference.
All right. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time on the Grendel Chronicles podcast. So during today's episode, you heard a slip of the tongue, and we are running with it. I am proud to announce a contest. Fantasty, as in fantasy like the Grendel Chronicles, fan as in you, and tasty as in food. So we decided to run a contest with an honest-to-goodness prize. We haven't chosen the prize yet, but we're open to suggestions of some kind of coupon or gift card. And it's pretty simple. Send us pictures of your homemade or homegrown food, not restaurant fare. Like, this is you, okay? This is from your kitchen or from your garden, and we'll pick a winner. You can tweet it to us at the Twitter handle at GrendhillCron. That's GrendhillCron. Or you can email it to fantasty@thorn.link. That's fantasty@thorn.link. At the end of June, we'll choose a winner and announce it in our July podcast episode. Now, this contest is open to our wonderful newsletter subscribers, but it's free to subscribe and free to submit to the contest. You can subscribe at thorn.link/Grendel/newsletter, and I'll put that link in the show notes as well so that you don't miss out. Have fun with this, and there's no limit to how many fantasty submissions you can send in. And be sure not to miss our next episode. It's a conversation with novelist Martin L. Shoemaker about constructed languages, invented languages, and linguistics in general. I had a great time talking to him, so I know you'll enjoy hearing what he had to say. We'll see you next time.
It's fun to pretend that people are watching. I didn't know how long I needed to look at the camera, so I looked away and then I went back.
That's all right. I probably wasn't looking at
it. It's going to look
goofy. We're going to fade out so it softens.
Okay.
I'll post this at the end because it's awkward and funny.
Okay.
The Writer Dojo does it too. They take a little snippet and put it at the end of the episode. Yeah. It's over.